the Business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to more businesses and farmers than any other bank.
Now, 3 months ago, Ebola was one of those conditions that we'd all heard of but maybe didn't fear. Now it's a very different scenario. But let's take a look at the financial realities for why no vaccine has been developed for this deadly disease. We're joined by from Galway by Dara O'Loughlin, President-elect of the Pharmaceutical Group of the European Union, and here in studio by Dr. Gerard Downes of Mary Immaculate College at the University of Limerick. Dara, if I could go to you first. No vaccine, no cure. Ebola first surfaced, I think it was about 38 years ago. How come?
Well, when Ebola first surfaced all those years ago, it was regarded very much as an exotic problem and a problem that affects people only in very narrow or restricted geographical areas in West Africa. And the reason for that is it's not an airborne virus, it's bloodborne and fluidborne, so you have to have physical contact with somebody who suffers from it to catch it. And therefore, the risk of it spreading to the Western world at that time was regarded as being very, very low. As far as I'm aware, the only people that were investigating either treatments and cures or vaccines for Ebola were all working for the US Department of Defense. And even there, it wasn't a huge project. And, you know, defense departments being what they are, they could as easily have been looking to weaponize it as to treat it. But they were pouring millions as opposed to tens of millions or the hundreds of millions that would be required into researching it.
After the 9/11 attacks, Dara, they increased the funding for a number of research projects, including Ebola, because they were worried that it might be used against the United States. But that seemed to dry up after a few years when it didn't emerge.
Yes, exactly. When it didn't emerge as a threat in the same way as, say, anthrax did, again, because it doesn't transmit as easily as diseases like anthrax, it seems that the funding dried up. They had produced this experimental drug cocktail or immunoglobulin cocktail called ZMapp, but only in very, very small quantities, and it hadn't gone through anything even resembling the sort of clinical trials that a medicine would go through before it would be prescribed for the general population. As you say, it seems to have just sat on a back burner with not sufficient budget to drive it forward. And of course, we're paying the price now, potentially.
Gerard, we now have a situation where thousands of people have already died from this illness. There is no vaccine. The obvious place to point the finger is at big pharmaceutical companies and say, you weren't interested in developing a vaccine because these were poor people in Africa in small numbers dying, and we'll blame big pharma for it.
There was no
money in it.
Well, as Dara pointed out, the numbers that have been killed by Ebola in the previous outbreaks, there were in the 38 years that you mentioned since Ebola first manifested itself, 1,700 people have died. So therefore, there was, if you like, a type of a market failure because, as you say, it was a disease of poor people in poor countries. So there was no particular market or no incentive. There was a lack of strong incentives to allocate resources to the development of a vaccine. But this is a problem which is typical of so many of what are called neglected diseases, such as, for example, leprosy, dengue fever, sleeping sickness. There's a whole category of these neglected diseases which affect 1 billion people around the world. And if you were to look at it, just take figures, for example, from Lancet Global Health from last year. They said that of the 850 therapeutic products that had been approved by regulatory agencies between 2000 and 2011, only 4% of these were for those neglected diseases. And that actually represented an improvement from the figures between 1979 and 1999, when barely 1% of therapeutic products were developed to cope with these neglected diseases. So there is a huge, if you like, sense of market failure. And how one addresses that gap is obviously a question which has provoked a great deal of debate, which I'm sure we can talk about over the next couple of
days. Dara, yeah, I mean, there are sort of contradicting factors here. There's a social need and a human need to address people's suffering through the development of medicine. But there is also an economic and financial reality around whether or not people will be able to buy the finished product, how much it might cost to develop. What are the focuses of big pharmaceutical companies now? What are the trends as to the kinds of things that they are channeling a lot of research into because they know that there's a good market there for it?
Well, developing medicines to the point where they can be brought to the market and prescribed for patients is an incredibly long and expensive process. And it has frequently been quoted that it costs up to $1 billion to get a product from the research stage or the discovery stage onto the market. If any company is going to spend $1 billion of its resources and the amount of time that that entails developing a product, they want to be sure that at the end of the day, there's a patient group or a patient population that can afford to use it. So diseases that affect only the developing world, or primarily the developing world, are less attractive for research purposes, which is why even take a disease like malaria that kills hundreds of millions of people every year in the developing world. There wasn't a great deal of research being done into how to treat and to cure malaria until Bill Gates decided he was going to pour billions of his money into developing treatment for that. And now it has become a focus. But most diseases affect Western populations and developing world populations, as developing world health improves as their populations age, as they develop a middle class, they develop the same illnesses that we have, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis or cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, diabetes and so on. So they do benefit from the treatments that are here. Even drugs that were developed for HIV and AIDS that were developed for treating patients in the Western world that are very expensive here and cost a lot of money are now being provided at very low cost to populations in sub-Saharan Africa where they can be of benefit. But I think the problem still that you've identified is correct, is that a disease that affects only a small number of people in a very impoverished part of the world is not going to attract private sector funding for research, because it's so difficult and it takes so long to develop a medicine or a treatment for anything that if there isn't somebody at the end of the day to pay for it, then the companies just can't afford to do it.
So, Jared, where's the state then in all of this? If it's just purely market forces, some of these illnesses or diseases will never, you know, medicine will never catch up and tackle them properly. So the state, other than Bill Gates coming in, the state surely has a role to plug the gap, the UN or whoever it is.
I think so. I agree with Dara there, certainly about that, Richard. I think you've raised a very important point. One instance of this, or one idea that has been explored by the World Health Organization, is to develop a prize fund which would reward drug manufacturers for developing drugs to treat neglected diseases, or indeed for reaching research and development milestones along the way while they're developing these drugs for those neglected diseases. And the Obama administration in the United States, very interestingly, has looked into the idea of a prize fund. Indeed, it has followed up through into its investigations, and it has developed 150 different prizes or prize funds for technological breakthroughs. So there is a role certainly for the state here. The idea of a prize fund is certainly not something that's it's not something new. There was a great deal of publicity about the Davis-Obel book Longitude, which showed how in the 18th century, how the British Parliament allowed developed a prize fund to measure longitude at sea. So there are, if you like, historical precedents, but also modern day templates, which show us that it would be possible with a great deal of investment, with the state working with private corporations to develop vaccines and antibiotics. As Dara pointed out, the cost of developing new drugs is extremely prohibitive, and there is always the incentive for pharmaceutical firms is to have a return on investment. But this prize fund option would certainly be one way around this.
But Dara, just to go into that point, Jared raises the point about the example from history about the British Parliament putting up a prize for a technological innovation. That was a government, that was state money that did that. I mean, is there not another way of some kind of carrot and stick approach in the relationship between state funding for coming up with cures for these utterly crippling and devastating illnesses causing so much human suffering, and pharmaceutical companies that need to make money as well as want to make money?
Yes, and of course the prize fund doesn't have to be $1 billion or anything like it, because the prize doesn't need to be to develop a compound that's ready for release to the market. The prize could be to produce something that has a reasonable chance of succeeding in treating a disease, to get it to the point where it can leave the laboratory and start clinical trials. And if you can incentivize people to get that far, and perhaps have an organization like the World Health Organization or the European Center for Disease Control or whatever, fund the clinical trial piece from there on, so that the medicine is then produced by a public agency for delivery as a public service to a patient group.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Just an interesting comment before we go from a health economist called Paul Paula, she's written to say that pharma makes substantially more profit and spends far more on marketing than on R&D. So an interesting and valid point there too. Thanks very much to Dara O'Loughlin, President-elect of the Pharmaceutical Group of the European Union, and Dr. Gerard Downes of Mary Immaculate College at the University of Limerick.